I think taxes are very interesting. They're very interesting because they are the way everything in our organized society happens. Well, I'm writing about them all the time now. That's my favorite thing about this election cycle, is that it's made taxes sexy.
All right, we got this. Ready?
Here we go.
John, you don't look like you're in a state of readiness.
Probably not.
Just wing it.
Wing it.
All right.
All right.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
I'm GeekWire civic editor Monica Nicholsberg.
And I'm GeekWire co-founder John Cook.
Coming up, we're going to be talking about Bill Gates, Elizabeth Warren, and...
taxes.
Yes.
And the election.
Exciting. This will really entice folks, right?
Exactly. And the election, as
we
Monica said.
Can't forget,
said.
We had an election, even though it's an off year.
That's right. Did Amazon's big spending on Seattle's city council pay off or backfire? We'll talk about that.
I think I predicted this a few weeks ago, listeners.
Exactly. So we'll get into that later on in the show. But first, let's talk about Bill Gates and let's check in with what happened in his interview at the New York Times Deal Book conference this week with Andrew Ross Sorkin. Monica, you covered this. We're going to listen to a few clips. Let's start with the discussion of taxes, because there is a fascinating proposal by Elizabeth Warren, the U.S. senator who's one of the front runners for the Democratic presidential nomination, to impose a wealth tax. One of the first questions that Bill Gates was asked during this conference was about that. And I was really kind of sitting on the edge of my seat to hear what he would say about it, because you don't hear from him specifically on a lot of the big proposals from these candidates.
It's true. The really interesting thing about this interview is the interviewer, Andrew Ross Sorkin, got Gates to talk about a lot of things he doesn't typically venture into, like his personal wealth and how much he pays in taxes and the presidential race. And I think that the exchange where he sort of talks around Elizabeth Warren's proposals is particularly revealing.
You know, I've paid over $10 billion in taxes. I paid more than anyone in taxes. But I, you know, I'm glad to have paid, you know, if I'd had to pay $20 billion, it's fine. But, you know, when you say I should pay $100 billion, okay, then I'm starting to do a little math about what I have left over. Sorry, I'm just kidding. You really want the incentive system to be there, and you can go a long ways without threatening that.
Have you ever talked to Elizabeth Warren about any of this
not.
Before? Would you? Would you want to?
You know, I'm not sure how open-minded she is. Or that she'd even be willing to sit down with somebody, you know, who has large amounts of money.
So what did Elizabeth Warren say about that?
She said she'd be happy to sit down and explain the details of her proposal. I think what he was alluding to there is that she's made a real concerted effort to show in her campaign that she's not taking money or even giving the impression of taking money from anyone who's really wealthy. So I think what he was saying is she probably wouldn't even like the optics of sitting down with me. But now that this is a big public conversation, she says she's game.
Wow. Okay. So are they going to sit down and talk?
We'll see. I mean, I think they're both pretty busy right now. And, you know, we've seen other exchanges like this on Twitter happen before. We saw Bernie Sanders calling out Amazon and Amazon saying, come by our warehouse anytime. And, you know, it's a little bit of showmanship, but I would love to be a fly on the wall if they did ever have this conversation.
Let's facilitate it.
There you go. Yes. We've been talking about this because Bill Gates also is coming out with a new book. Let's leave that off the podcast. We can talk about that offline. But no, I like where you're headed, John. I got to say, this interview by Andrew Ross Sorkin was a masterclass in interviewing Bill Gates. Almost every single question and answer could have been a headline and a story. Everything from talking about Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk to Bill Gates' own use of technology. It was fascinating. He was saying that he basically has to remind himself to pick up his phone because he doesn't use Instagram, and the way he needs to keep up with his daughter is by watching her Instagram posts. And like, technology has passed Bill Gates by. That is a statement that I never thought I would have said.
That was a really interesting moment. He talked about how he's still a big screen guy, and in order to relate to his kids, he needs to remember that the new generation is much more small screen focused. So he talked about needing to be on Instagram to talk to his daughter and WhatsApp to talk to his son. And it was this really fascinating moment that even the person who arguably created the modern digital age can be passed by the next generation.
He also dove into some interesting history that's very relevant right now, and that is the impact of the Justice Department's investigation of Microsoft, the antitrust investigation, on the company. And it's relevant now because we're talking about the possibility of breaking up Facebook, Google, Amazon. That is another one of Elizabeth Warren's proposals. So let's listen to what he said about that.
I do think there are things about technology companies that it's worth looking at what the policy should be. I'm not sure, but believe me, there's another one where you can say I'm just super biased. I didn't think Microsoft should be broken up. I argued against it, and I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
Do you think it made the technology environment more competitive?
I think that's one of the... But everyone else can say that if they want. It's not true to me, and... I will never change that opinion.
I think that we've talked before where there was a view that maybe the case, and maybe it's the case itself, might have taken the company's eye off the ball around mobile, might have given
Google an opportunity. But that doesn't help. That's not a pro-consumer thing. There's no doubt that the antitrust lawsuit was bad for Microsoft, and we would have been more focused on creating the... phone operating system. And so instead of using Android today, you would be using Windows Mobile. If it hadn't been for the antitrust case, Microsoft would have gone, we were so close. I was just too distracted. I screwed that up because of the distraction. And, you know, we were just 3 months too late with the release that Motorola would have used on a phone. Yes, it's a winner-take-all game, is for sure. That, you know, now nobody here's ever heard of Windows Mobile. But oh well. And I wouldn't... that's a few hundred billion here or there.
He went on to say that had Microsoft been able to have a great presence in mobile phone operating systems, he would not have retired as soon as he did.
Yeah, he was really open in a way that you don't always hear. And I think it's a great interview, and I think he was just maybe prepared to say some of these things. Because as you know, interviewing him, he's very guarded on many of these things and very prescribed on what he's going to say. It's just interesting hearing his tone and style on this.
And I got to say, I was watching the video of it. He started off, he does a lean away from you when he's not engaged. And he started off the interview that way. And over the course of the first couple questions, he started scooching back up and he was vertical in his seat. So you can tell he was engaged.
What do you make of his comments there, the substance of them, that Microsoft would have perhaps that they were close on mobile? I don't completely buy that. I don't think that they necessarily would have been the winner of the mobile operating system regardless.
Well, I'm more inclined to buy it than you are, because if you look at what they were doing with Windows Mobile, which came before Windows Phone, Windows Mobile was kind of like turning the PC into a small screen, whereas Windows Phone was much more designed for small screens from the outset. I mean, I was around covering it back then, and they were getting close. I agree.
Well, this is where it is this great debate on whether these large technology companies can make this transition and these pivots into these gigantic markets. And my contention is that large companies like an IBM or a Microsoft in this era were so large and so baked into their monopoly position that only an entrepreneurial upstart would be able to come in and actually look at the market in a truly creative way, like an Apple, and really come in and disrupt it. And so I would argue that the antitrust decision did slow Microsoft down and made them take their eye off the ball. But even regardless, if that never happened, I don't think we'd be sitting here with everybody having Windows Mobile phones in their pocket. I just don't think they had the DNA to make that business transition.
But Monica, the bigger point he was making was that he believes that the answer to these companies having too much power is not to break them up, but to unlock the data that's inside of them. Basically, interoperability between these services so that they can't lock users into what they're doing. He's saying that kind of sharing of data, opening up of the platforms in a more transparent way to competitors is the way to address these antitrust issues, not breaking the companies up.
I can see where, from his perspective, that seems like the most effective tool. I'm not 100% convinced. I wasn't covering Microsoft at this time, so I don't know for sure that their situation is totally analogous to the current moment that we're in, because I think what regulators are really concerned with is the lack of competition in, let's say, social media, where the biggest challengers to Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp are Facebook now. And it doesn't really matter if there's interoperability between those services, because what is your other choice for a social media site that everyone is on?
But what if somebody could take
phone call?
that is archaic. No way.
Going out and meeting somebody for coffee?
Absurd.
All right. Going to the library and reading a book?
What is a library?
All right. We've got one more clip. You're going to enjoy this one.
Do you have any interest in space?
No. Well,
your neighbor in Seattle likes space.
He can have it.
Why is that?
Because malnutrition is so much more impactful. You know, HIV is more impactful. Malaria is more impactful.
Have you ever talked to Jeff about that?
Oh, sure. You know, Elon likes Mars. Jeff likes artificial planets. You know, I read a lot of science fiction, but I guess not as much as they did.
I love it.
That's awesome.
He was in such a zinger mood. I mean, it was like one
was
after the other.
Real quotable.
Yes. Yeah. I highly recommend the entire interview. He also addressed some tough issues, such as his conversations with Jeffrey Epstein after Jeffrey Epstein had been convicted. And it was interesting hearing Gates's own explanation of that, and frankly, much more convincing than when his people put out a statement on his behalf. His main point was, hey, I was doing everything I could to raise money for these causes, and I made a mistake. And he was very clear. It was refreshing to see him talking about the mistakes that he made just in a very candid way and explaining why it happened, not making excuses, and effectively apologizing.
Isn't that amazing how unusual that is? Even though it puts you on the person's side, when somebody just says, I messed up, I take responsibility, it was my mistake, it's so different than equivocating and putting out excuses. But we don't see a lot of that in leadership right now.
The transformation of Bill Gates over the last 25 years is you talk about a masterclass. There's been a masterclass on the PR marketing positioning of Bill Gates over the last 25 years.
It is that.
A change in him as well.
I think,
but
the reason that
it's sparked by some smart people around him, I believe.
I believe it starts with him and the fact that he has continued to grow. He reads. He has a family, starting with his late mom, his dad.
That's true. I agree with that.
His wife, Melinda. His wife and partner in the Gates Foundation, Melinda Gates. I mean, he is fortunate in so many ways that go beyond money.
I would also say that while I do think he has become much better at public speaking and at his public image, there's a kind of counter trend, this comeuppance for billionaires, that's also been really interesting to watch, where even someone like Bill Gates, who has dedicated the majority of his fortune to philanthropy and is seen as really the most serious billionaire in terms of putting the wealth that he's generated toward solving world problems, there's still a lot of skepticism of how he was able to amass that wealth and whether anyone should have it. And I don't think that's going away. I think with our growing income inequality, it's just going to continue to mount, even if the billionaire in question is sort of the best case scenario of billionaires.
It's interesting because he brought that up in terms of the Giving Pledge, this initiative that he's helped to lead, where they're trying to get all of the world's 1% to give away half of their fortunes by the time they pass away or over the course of their lifetime. And he talked about the challenge that they have in going out and trying to raise that money, and not necessarily in some countries knowing that it was raised or amassed as a fortune by legitimate means.
Right. And that kind of gets to the broader question here. I don't think anyone is arguing that philanthropy is bad or that people with a lot of money should be giving it away. I think the question is, when we think about resources on a global scale, resources that we all have and share and how they should be allocated, should the majority of wealth that's generated be at the whims of individuals, private citizens, or should it be controlled by a democracy of the people?
And that's fundamentally the question at the heart of a lot of these policies. And it's also one of the questions at the heart of a current debate going on in Seattle. And we're going to get into that right around the corner. You're listening to GeekWire.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with Monica Nicholsberg and John Cook. It was a big week here in Seattle. There was an election, and Amazon played a bigger role in this election than we've seen it play in the Seattle community in a long time. Monica, can you set the stage for us here?
Sure. 7 of the 9 Seattle City Council seats were up for grabs, and there were some other initiatives on the ballot that were pretty important. And 3 weeks before the election, Amazon donated $1 million to the Seattle Chamber of Commerce's Political Action Committee, and that money went toward supporting the candidates that this PAC had endorsed. They're all seen as more business-friendly, pragmatic candidates versus the more progressive wing of existing Seattle City Council incumbents and newcomers who were expected to kind of carry on in this tradition of passing very progressive policies that have really rankled Amazon in the past.
So the pro-business candidates in this case, across most parts of this country, would be considered radical liberals.
It's true. Seattle politics are middle left to very left. So that's where we should just set the stage at the get-go. But that also makes this such an interesting microcosm to these broader trends that we're seeing throughout the country, where you have some of the policies that candidates for president, like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, want to see implemented nationwide, like a $15 minimum wage, worker protections for domestic workers and gig economy workers, paid family leave. These policies that are really in the canon of progressive liberalism have been implemented here, some of them years ago. And on the other side of that, we have a call for a return to kind of good government, to pragmatism, to just kind of slowing things down and getting back to basics and being more efficient in the way that we spend. And that call is really supported by the business community here in Seattle, particularly by Amazon, which has gone head to head with the city council in the past.
What happened in the election?
It's been a mixed bag, not great for Amazon. Most of the candidates that they had supported at this point are not leading their opponents. And it looks like we're going to have a city council that is as progressive, if not more progressive, than the previous one, with one wild card, the most vocal critic opponent of Amazon, Councilmember Kshama Sawant, who is a member of the Socialist Alternative Party. Her seat is still kind of in contention, and her opponent is the one who received the most money from this Amazon-backed PAC.
That's really interesting. So does that mean that Amazon's money can't buy an election? Is that really what's happened here?
In some ways, I think, as John pointed out in our last podcast, Amazon played into progressives' hands. You know, they gave them a big rallying cry to say this is a company.
It became a national rallying cry.
It
you
did.
Had Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders talking about the city council race in Seattle.
So this was the question. This was the question that you raised and that we explored. Did it backfire?
Well, if Sawant ends up winning, which it looks like the trend line is that she might end up winning this seat, then it absolutely 100% backfired.
Do you think
it backfired. I was speaking to Monica privately about this. I was saying my contention is the gap on some of these folks where the more pro-business candidate was ahead would have been much further ahead had Amazon not stuck their nose into the mix here.
What we know for sure is it was not a slam dunk for Amazon. It was not like this money came in and bought a new city council. I would say at best, it supported some of the candidates they wanted and will get a city council that is pretty comparable to the one that we have now. At worst, as these elections continue to come in, we're recording this Friday afternoon, we'll see a more progressive city council than we've had in the past that Amazon has had frustrations with.
Did it backfire, John?
I think so. I think the gap would have been wider here for the more pro-business candidates in their wins had Amazon not inserted themselves. It became, as Monica said, a national rallying cry. It was the main issue you saw in Seattle politics over the last 3 weeks. And that is not a good place to be if you're one of these candidates that got the support from Amazon. And it was very telling that many of the candidates that got the support from Amazon were pushing back against it. They're like, it's not really are my feelings on things. You know,
they disavowed it. Several of them came out with statements that said this is a distraction. I agree there's too much corporate spending in politics, and I would support legislation to limit corporate spending in politics.
For many years, Amazon stayed out of politics. They stayed out of the Seattle community. And I'm wondering if we're now seeing, both on the national level and in our city level, the fact that they're just not good at it.
Well, look what happened in New York with HQ2.
That's exactly what I'm thinking about.
Not properly handled.
It was a debacle.
You know how Jeff Bezos has said in the past on failures like the Fire Phone? It wasn't really a failure because we knew down the line we were going to have to be in the hardware business. And we learned how to be in the hardware business, even if this didn't work out that well. And then they had the smash surprise hit of the Amazon Echo. I don't feel like they've made those same investments on public policy.
Well, maybe these are the mistakes that are being made that are going to lead them towards
They're just getting into the public policy business. It's been 20 years of not really engaging with reporters or with the public, of keeping their heads down and focusing on other parts of their business. And now is their Fire Phone moment. They're just, you know, kind of wading into public life, and it's a little ham-handed. It's come off as a little tone deaf. I mean, they have had some successes. Like when I alluded earlier to the frustrations they've had with the city council, a big part of that was on the so-called head tax, which was going to be on big businesses. The council passed it and then repealed it because Amazon played hardball and threatened to slow their growth here. So it's not like this strategy has never worked, but there have been a lot of moments where you wonder what the calculus was before they made this PR move.
I love this analogy.
The fire phone moment?
The fire phone. This is this city council race, and the Amazon money that was pumped into it is the equivalent of Amazon's failure of the fire phone.
Now, as Monica said, that led to Echo and Alexa. They figured out another way to do it.
I think she's right here. Yes. I think she's right that they're not experienced here. They're learning. They're making mistakes, but they're trying to figure this out.
But does that same principle apply to public policy in the same way that it does to technology products, tech markets, consumer behaviors? Because consumers are just like, hey, cool, speaker, interesting voice assistant. I'll try that. Are people going to be willing to say to Amazon in the next election, oh, let's hear what you have to say?
Well, I do think it matters. Todd, you had a great interview this week with Alicia Valavanis, the CEO of the Seattle Storm. And one of the things that really stuck with me from that interview was you can't win unless you've lost.
That
was a great moment. And I think that's what's going on here. You can in anything, and it's in sports, politics, business, you have to have failures in order to build on those failures to have success.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that in this case, because ever since the head tax and HQ2, Amazon has been under a microscope for every decision they make in civic life, and I don't think that's going to change. We're only seeing the public get more and more skeptical and frustrated with the tech industry, and particularly Amazon. And I think at this point, even a good faith effort to engage civically or put money behind something that they care about is not going to be received that well.
Yeah, I agree with you, Monica. I think they've used up a lot of the capital that they otherwise might have had by default, and it's going to be tougher, and they're going to have to be much, much better at it than they are to get back to even a neutral place in the public eye.
At the same time, we are very, very close to these issues, and the majority of people out there do not really see Amazon the same way that we do here in Seattle. They consistently win the Harris poll of the most respected companies. Customers still love them. So I think, you know, they take some of this with a grain of salt, because the most important people to Amazon aren't necessarily in their backyard. They're all over the world.
Great point. And I have to be reminded about that consistently here in the bubble. So thank you. All right. Coming up next, it's the Random Channel, including an amazing response from a fan of the Seattle Sounders to a GeekWire contest. You want to stick around for that? We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's time for the Random Channel, that moment of the week when we talk about some of the random items we were buzzing about behind the scenes this week. John, there's nothing more buzzworthy in your world right now than the MLS Cup.
I have got the fever. I've got the fever. Yeah, I am listening to I'm a pretty big podcast listener. I've got my routine on various podcasts. I have completely shifted my podcasting habits here over the last week. I'm 100% soccer MLS Cup podcast.
Now, before our listeners shift their podcast listening habits, let's explain to them what we're talking about so that we don't lose them.
What is the MLS Cup?
Seattle Sounders professional soccer team, FC, are based here in Seattle. They have a rabid fan base, largely consisting of tech people. There's a
lot of crossover, yep.
A new ownership group includes Satya Nadella, Terry Myerson, Microsoft execs, former Microsoft exec. It's really a tech story in many ways. The Sounders, against all odds, apparently, made it into the Super Bowl of Major League Soccer, the MLS Cup. And
soccer fans probably wouldn't like that analogy, but yes, this is largely accurate, Todd. I'm very impressed, yes, given your limited soccer knowledge.
Yes, and so the MLS Cup is going to be held in Seattle
on Sunday,
the 10th.
That's right,
November. So you may or may not know the outcome by the time
you're
listening
to this. Don't get tickets; they're sold out. They sold out in minutes.
And is this the first time it's ever been held in Seattle?
Yes. Well, not technically. This is the first time that it's been held in Seattle that the Sounders are playing in the MLS Cup. They used to have it at a neutral site, and so it was hosted at CenturyLink Field, but the Sounders did not participate in that match.
We partnered with Slalom Consulting to give away some tickets, and we put out a call on social media. What was the call?
Well, the folks over at Slalom reached out to us early this week, and they said, hey, we got two tickets to our Slalom experience, which anyone who's been to a match at CenturyLink Field knows they're these great pitch side seats. And so you're right on the field. They're great seats. You can feel pitch. The sweat of Jordan Morris flying off of him as he's buzzing down the wing. And they reached out and they said, hey, we thought it'd be kind of cool to do something with GeekWire on this. And of course, we immediately sprung into action and said, yeah, why don't we do this some sort of contest? And we were all brainstorming and we came up with this concept of Geekiest Sounders Fan. And so we had a social media competition contest in which folks presented raps, haikus, poems, photo galleries of their love of the Sounders and Geekwire
and Zach
Slalom.
Scott
and Zach Scott, Mr. Sounder himself, was our judge on this.
He's with Slalom,
who now works at Slalom, and we had some really funny submissions.
So let's hear the winner.
My friend just slacked me, asking if I heard of this. Geekiest Sounders Fan, well, I'm the nerdiest. Need proof? Here's the song. Rubik's Cube, D&D dice, geek life tattoo. Woo! Win a less cup, no peak higher. See me on the sidelines, thanks to GeekWire. So many fans, I know my chances all elusive. The best part of this is that the food is all inclusive, but I won't abuse it. I promise, Slalom, you'll be proud. Kick it like Zach Scott, fire up the crowd. See, we like it loud, and our supporters are expensive. I hope I win because these tickets are expensive.
That was Andrew Hartpence, who works in marketing at the Pokemon Company and is a true geek. And he is going to MLS Cup in the Slalom Experience Sunday at noon, hopefully cheering the Rave Green on to our second MLS Cup trophy. I will be there. I will not have my voice on Monday regardless.
Well, congratulations to Andrew, and go Sounders.
Absolutely.
Monica, your random channel?
My random channel is about work. We had a story this week.
Boring.
Whoa. I know. It's not as fun as sports to some, but
it's
about
taxes.
It's specifically about working less, which some people might hear as fun. We had a story this week that Microsoft experimented with a 4-day work week in Japan and saw productivity jump by 40%.
A 4-day work week, how many hours was each day
15.
Of that week?
I think they were standard days. I think it wasn't like 4 tens. It was like 4 instead of 5 traditional work days.
This is an important question. Let's find this out for sure. I don't want to.
It's not in Crit's story.
And how do they measure productivity?
That's a good. We will investigate this. What appealed about this to you?
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I'm totally against it.
Yeah, it sounds horrible. I think it's interesting because I talk a lot with my friends about the nature of work and its evolving culture. And we've got sort of these two trends moving at the same time where we're so connected that we can be in communication all the time and work from home, a lot of us, and that allows for more flexibility. But at the same time, it's kind of an always on mentality. So this just struck me. I thought it was interesting. And especially the productivity piece of it. There are so many tech companies that are trying to balance a really tight labor market and offering a lot of perks to their employees in order to recruit and retain them with being a fast-moving tech company and wanting to get as much out of them as possible. So this idea that you could make people more efficient with less time is really interesting to me.
It's really funny that you brought this up with the two of us.
Why?
Does this reflect the work style of John and myself?
Of you two? Well, you guys are always working.
Yeah, I'm aspiring someday to get to a 6-day work week.
A 6-day work week. I hope you get that too.
To reduce down to one.
Well, I mean, I think it speaks to the flexibility of our work here because we do work from home kind of whenever we want. We work from the road. We work a lot of hours and we work very hard here. But I think that when employees have flexibility, whether that's a shorter week or just the ability to kind of own their time more, they actually do get more done and are more comfortable being available.
I buy that. And that is something that's, I think, really important is if you're working all those hours, you get to choose the 70 hours that you work every week. You get to.
We can only hope.
Speaking for myself.
We can all dream of such a life.
Okay. Speaking of productivity and Microsoft, actually, little did you know that your random channel would segue into mine, Monica.
Or maybe I planned the whole thing.
I don't know if you know this about me, but I am a real nerd when it comes to text-to-speech applications.
I know this about you.
If I can be more productive by having an assistant, a virtual assistant, a machine, read things to me, I am all over it. If there's something where I don't have to be sitting in front of a screen in a chair, I can be riding an exercise bike with my noise-canceling headphones, I can be shooting baskets, I can be jumping in a trampoline. Don't make fun of me, Monica. I know you know that's my pet topic. But I can have my AirPods on in the trampoline and catch up on the news, not just podcasts, but things read to me. I love it. So Microsoft this week came out with a new feature for iPhone and Outlook that will play your emails. That's the verb that they use. I just got in on the preview of this, and I'm going to be trying it out. And so the idea is you basically tell Cortana to play your emails and then the phone switches into an alternative UI. I haven't actually used it yet. I've just seen it. So that's why I'm not precise on exactly what it is. But it actually reads the emails to you. So let's actually listen to a little bit of what that sounds like.
I have 5 emails for you right now. This will take about 5 minutes. Miguel Garcia changed the time for customer debrief from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. A few minutes ago, Lydia Bauer sent an email about marketing team event just to you. It says, "Did you see Colin's ideas?
Hey Cortana, flag this email."
Yesterday, Kat sent an email about research proposal. It says, "Sounds great. You're all caught up."
I should point, there is actually no background music when you actually do that. That was a Microsoft promotional
video. I was
going to
say, wow, man, I'm really pumped up. I'm really excited about this.
But not for you, Monica.
No, I'm against it.
I don't think this would make me
what?
More efficient.
I'm a hard no.
Why?
I'm a hard no on this, too.
Okay, I'm going to prove you wrong.
Well,
I don't
because
know.
Then
I think
you're doubling your work because I like to read an email and act on it at the same time. This is like you're reading all of them and then sorting them for later responses.
No.
And then when you go in to respond, you have to read it again to respond.
No, that's not what I plan to do. I plan to, for the most part, archive things.
But what I don't know, because, you know, you and I both have our Gmail set up in a really efficient way so that the stuff that you're probably going to need to respond to is in the important and unread. And the stuff that you're probably not going to need to respond to is lower. If you're just going to listen to all of those, it's I don't know. I'm not. Prove me wrong on the next podcast. But
well, maybe you can set up the parameters of it that it only is reading your most priority inbox.
We'll
then you have to go back and respond to them.
No,
can you respond from Cortana?
I believe you can.
You
can
say,
you can.
When they say, sounds good, you're like, awesome.
Thanks.
Keep working it.
Yeah.
You know, I this is one thing.
When have
I don't,
you ever
I don't,
said keep working
never,
it?
Never.
That actually sounds like a John email to me.
Keep working
no,
it?
No, I don't know what no, I'm talking no. about. But here's the deal. I do love, Monica, to this automated response. I'm not buying. I don't think this would work for me. But I have started to use the automated reactions that Google proposes to you.
I use the heck out of those.
I you know, that is really a lovely feature.
It is good.
Yeah.
So this is kind of this is in that same vein, though. It's just audio.
It's the audio. I think the audio and the voice.
I don't think I can process.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
Between audio and my machine. I would struggle with that.
I like where it's headed, though. I just want the, as I've said many times, I just want the SD card slot in the back of my head, and then
the matrix just upload information.
Yeah. And most importantly, almost like Dumbledore's Pensieve, where he would put his most troubling thoughts up on the shelf for the night so he could sleep. That's what I want.
I want that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm much more bullish on magic than technology.
I think it's called psychotherapy, but I'm not sure. one last rant here, because I like this idea, but I am kind of pissed at Microsoft about this, because those people convinced me to switch from iPhone to Android because of the
those people,
Samsung Galaxy. Well, Satya Nadella, who I talked about.
Satya Nadella convinced you
indirectly. Yes, I told him this. If you haven't heard our interview with him, we talked about this a little bit last week. At any rate, I switched because they came out with these new features for the Galaxy Note 10 Android device that work well with Windows and make Windows more like a first party experience with the phone. For the very reasons that we talked or that we heard about from Bill Gates earlier, Microsoft doesn't have a viable mobile operating system, so they have to partner. Anyway, I switched to Android, and they come out with this damn thing on iOS. What the hell? Pick a platform, Microsoft. If you don't have your own, at least pick one that you think your customers should use. Come on. It's really dumb.
Customers are everywhere, though.
Why, though?
Why?
Don't they want to be everywhere?
Okay, at least come out with it at the same time on iOS and Android.
That'd
don't penalize me for the choice that you prompted
me to
make.
That's fair. I understand in your specific situation, but like more broadly.
What matters more than my specific situation, Monica?
Absolutely nothing, Todd.
Sorry, keep going.
No, I'm
all right. Hey, this was fun. I will report back, and I actually really want to write about this once I try it, because, you know, win or lose with this player emails feature, it's going to be a good story, which is kind of like the ultimate great thing about this job, is even when the stuff you use sucks, it's a win because it's great content. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Monica Nicholsberg.
And I'm John Cook.
Go Sounders.
Go Sounders.
Talk to you next time on GeekWire.